welcome to our March 3rd meeting of the legislature. Today is Square Root Day. I invite you to rise and join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chaff?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be a few minutes late this evening. Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Klingelair?
Present.
14 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have one proclamation. If Janice Graham is here, she can come on up to receive it. This is in honor of Women's History Month in Tompkins County. And I'll read the proclamation. Whereas American women of every race, class, and ethnic background have made historic contributions to the growth and strength of our nation in countless recorded and unrecorded ways, and whereas American women have played and continue to play critical economic, cultural, and social roles in every sphere of life of our nation by constituting a significant portion of the labor force working inside and outside the home, and whereas American women have played a unique role throughout the history of the nation by providing a majority of the volunteer labor force of the nation, and whereas American women have were particularly important in the establishment of early charitable, philanthropic, and cultural institutions in our nation, and whereas American women of every race, class, and ethnic background served as early leaders in the forefront of every major progressive social change movement, and whereas American women have been leaders not only in securing their own rights of suffrage and equal opportunity, but also in the abolitionist movement, the emancipation movement, the industrial labor movement, the civil rights movement, the peace movement, which create a fair and just society for all. And whereas, despite these contributions, the role of women, American women in history has been consistently overlooked and undervalued in the literature, teaching, and study of American history. Now, therefore, I, Mike Kaplinka-Layer, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the month of March 2009 as Women's History Month in Tompkins County and call upon the people of Tompkins County to observe this month with appropriate programs, ceremonies, and activities in honor and celebration of all women. And here to receive it is Janice from the she's president of the City Federation of
Women's Organizations.
You can speak at the mic up here if you want.
I invite everyone to come to the Women's Community Building this month where there's a timeline of women's history. And we'll also have a big event on Thursday, March 26th, and everyone's invited to join us. And it's about saving the environment one woman at a time.
We have no special orders of the day, so we'll move on to privilege of the floor for the public. We have one person signed up in advance, and others can use the mic as well if they want to identify themselves. But John Benkowski is signed up. John? You could state your name and where you reside for the record. And our rules are to speak within a three-minute time limit for the public.
Thank you. I don't have a teleprompter, so I will have to read what I have written down. My name is John Benkowski. I live at 108 Treva Avenue in the city of Ithaca. I am retired, but I still have to work to cover continuing increase in taxations in the county, the city, and the Ithaca school system. I'm a professional, licensed, certified real estate appraiser. I value houses, churches, gravel pits, factories, even the building in which you sit right now. I valued that one. Recently, I received a notice of an increase in my assessment. My assessment increased by $25,000, which translates to $1,000 increase in taxes. I live in the city of Ithaca. The assessment in the county is based on a full market value. So if you can increase in full market, as stated in the letter, a falling market is what we are experiencing currently. The real estate market is not going up, contrary to what the newspaper says. I know the market. I do appraisals for a living. To forestall going into bankruptcy, foreclosure, and debt, I have to keep on working. I do know properties in the county. They are selling, but that means that there's a willing buyer and a willing seller. So therefore, if you take economics 101, a willing buyer and a willing seller tells you that establishes the market. What I'm finding out is that the market is showing a 10 to 15% below listing or asking price. So it's not, you know, when you look at it, there's a decrease in that. An increase assessment based on a falling market is incredulous, patently wrong, and pure nonsense. Further, at the request of the county assessment department, they produce tables for assessment, tax exemptions, and the pilot program. What I found in the tables, troubling. I noticed that 64.4% of all real estate properties in the county is tax exempt. That's 64%. Doesn't mean that it includes some churches, other properties, similar. But interestingly, 31.45% are privately owned tax-exempt properties. I continued farther, and I found that 45% of the, or 45 properties, are under the aegis of the Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency, and are on a graduated tax payment schedule through the pilot program. These 45 properties do not include the AES plant at the Milliken Station in Lansing. Why am I concerned about tax abatement? Why am I concerned about taxes? As a taxpayer, the pilot program I find egregious. Let me explain. In appraising and in business, I find that almost without exception, every commercial or every business property seeking or not seeking money has to produce an income and expense statement. This pro forma statement must include permanent and variable expense items. The permanent item is the tax expense. It is actual. It is not based on tax exemption. One must show projected expenses without any exemptions for financing. These pro formas are based on actualities. For example, assume that the real estate tax on a property is $25,000. Under the pilot program, the first year exemption is 100%. The tax payment is nil, and the owner of property stands to gain $25,000. But the tax money must come from someplace to satisfy the county needs, so the burden falls on someone like me and other county taxpayers. Now, the canard comes in saying, well, the business would not settle in Tompkins County if they didn't get the tax exemption. That's a fallacy.
I'll have to ask you
it's
to begin.
It's absurd.
John, can you begin to wind up?
Yeah, I will. It's absurd. I'll cut down some of it. There is another tax exemption problem with respect to using tax exemption for residential properties, for housing. Industrial Development Agency means industrial, does not mean residential. To close off, with a little bit more, but last but not least, I believe that there are too many bodies on the county's Board of Representatives. The board operates on a budget of from a quarter to a half $1 million or even more. There are too many representatives overlapping and serving the community. I think currently there are three or four representatives serving the town of Ithaca, including Cayuga Heights and Northeast School Area. With the coming census in 2010, a readjustment and enforcement should be made. The board should be reduced to, say, 7 to 9 members. This would save the county money. As we have recently seen, there is too much bitterness amongst the individuals to faithfully serve the constituents. They cannot say in their wrangling, it is only business when it is not that. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any other members of the public wish to speak? Do any other members of the public wish to speak? There are none. We'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Let me just remind us that privilege of the floor for legislators is a privilege and that we have to share the airtime and be judicious with our comments. I will indeed exercise not calling on people if they've already spoken once if I need to. If they're short comments, I'll be glad to do so. So I'll kind of keep track, and if it goes on, we may have to move on with the meeting. Are there, I think we'll start with Jim Dennis with the Youth Award for the evening.
I'm not willing to throw myself on the fire just yet and as a legislator to leave, but you know, maybe somebody will do that to me in November if I happen to run again, but it's a good comment. Let me introduce to you Kelsey Melvin. She's our distinguished youth winner this month, and she was recommended by a woman from Trumansburg named Carol Mann, who's involved in the food pantry in the village of in the town of Ulysses in Trumansburg. Kelsey has with her today her sister Claire and Sophie, and they're seated back there. Her mom Joan is here, and her grandparents are here also. And let me just read to you what the nomination said. Am I using the mic? Yes, yeah. I am.
Could you use it, Jim?
Yeah, I'll try. Kelsey attends T-Berg High School. She recently celebrated her 16th birthday on New Year's Eve. And most of us, we have birthday parties. We may get presents from people or special greetings. She invited her friends, and what she requested was that they bring food, non-perishable food, to her birthday party. And she was able to collect 24 boxes of food that she then passed on to the food pantry in Trumansburg. And as all of you recognize, food pantries are a burgeoning industry these days. So that was very beneficial to that particular pantry. And Carol Mann wrote to me, through her generosity, she provided 24 boxes of food to the group. She's a fine example of a caring young adult to give from the heart to benefit people in need. We're delighted to submit her name for the honor, and that was submitted by Carol Mann. And Kelsey is here, and she would like to say a few words. Well, let me give you what we have. We have several prizes, some of which are not here, but I will pick them up and deliver them to your house. But what you are receiving is the TC Distinguished Youth Award plaque from Bang's Ambulance, the Cougar Radio Group Purity Ice Cream, A and B Awards, and engraving has your name lovely printed on there, and there you are. There are some other things that I will deliver to you in a box, okay?
It's funny how ideas come about. When planning for my 16th birthday party, I knew that if I requested no gifts, my friends would do them anyway. So asking my friends to bring food for the Trumansburg Food Pantry in lieu of a gift turned out to be a gift in itself. I made my goal of 16 bags of groceries known. What I didn't expect, and what amazed me, was how much my friends rose to the challenge. It was so exciting to watch the stack of canned goods grow as they arrived. It was a concrete example to all of us that no gift is too small. We experienced firsthand what it takes to make a difference and saw this ripple through us and into our community. In the words of Eleanor Roosevelt, "Since you get joy out of giving to others, one should put a good deal of thought into the happiness you are able to give." Thank you.
I want to thank Carol Mann, and I want to thank Kelsey and her family for attending the meeting, and we really appreciate in Tompkins County young people who do these kinds of activities and many others. Thank you so much for coming, all of you.
Thank you, Jim. Are there other legislators who wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Pam McAsey?
Yes, I would like to report on yet another meeting in Albany about garbage trucks. The proposed regulations that the governor has put forth have made their way to this very oddly named agency called GORE, which is the Governor's Office of Regulatory Reform. And they are looking through them. Their role in this process is to make sure that they're legally defensible and that there's some cost-benefit analysis done. So it was a very productive meeting, and we have just on Thursday is a deadline where they will all the information that they're looking for will be in. They will make their decision, and then there will be a 45-day period for public comment once again, and then they will just come. If there are no changes, then it will actually happen. But wait and see, and hope. Anyway, so that's the latest. The latest on the large garbage transport trucks.
Thank you, Pam. Frank Proto.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have three items I wanted to give you a heads up on. The first is at the last meeting, we had a discussion about some advisory boards, and one of them was the Planning Advisory Board. A comment was made, since this won't come up under a regular committee report, a comment was made that the Planning Advisory Board is advisory only to the Commissioner of Planning. I had a set of the bylaws run off, and clearly it says to make recommendations to the legislature and the Commissioner of Planning concerning, and then it goes on. In the purpose, the body, it says that this has to be consistent with Article 12A, and that the board shall be to provide the Tompkins County Legislature and the Commissioner of Planning with advice and counsel on comprehensive land use, and it goes on with more of the description. There's one instance where it does indicate that it would be advisory to the commissioner because of some items like the work plan, the department's work plan. But clearly, the Planning Advisory Board is advisory to us as well as the Commissioner of Planning. Just clarification. Secondly, I wanted to thank all of you that were able to make the pancake breakfast at the Moose Club a Saturday back. We're planning a ceremony in the fall. Some of you have read about it in the paper, to rededicate the monuments in DeWitt Park. And the county's been tangentially involved in that for a number of years because of the city and the church. The church actually owns the park. And I want to thank Karen Fuller for all the work that she's done with Jackie Kipola in helping the grants come through on that. The reason I'm mentioning this now is that those of you that were able to make this breakfast helped us raise a considerable amount of money that will go towards that. And Joe, you'll be very pleased. There was some county representation there. And, of course, by the time I got there, the number of people that I had a chance to see probably was fewer than those of you that were there earlier, but a member of your staff and I had breakfast together, Joe, So thank you, and please thank Doreen. That was very kind of her to do that. Just bear with me. One other member of our county staff received the recognition. Sometimes we don't get a chance to say these things out loud, but Kim Moore over in IT was honored as the Officer of the Week for helping the Sheriff's Office get online. And I happened to be up there working with Peter Meskel, doing some work with the SPCA the day that she was pulling wire. And she literally was pulling wire. She deserved every bit of the award that she received, believe me. It was nice to see a county individual get recognition that way. I don't want to monopolize this time because I know that you're trying to move things along. So I'll hold my other item for a little later.
All right. Thank you very much. Other legislators who wish to speak? Martha Robertson?
There's a meeting tomorrow night at in the Varna Community Center for about the TCAT proposed route changes, and I want to thank TCAT for having taking the time and putting the staff effort into putting together an extra meeting. There are a lot of concerns about changes in Varna and Aetna, so at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at in the Varna Community Association, thanks to TCAT. I am on the advisory board of the Science Center, and I get this newsletter every month, and I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is that they, for the second year in a row, they've done a survey of high school seniors. And they do it's a one-page survey, quick thing that they do in the homeroom to see about, you know, their experience at the Science Center. They have results from 120 students from Ithaca High and Dryden High School this year. And of those 120 kids, 91%, this is a survey of asking about students who'd made at least one visit to the Science Center before age 12. So they're high school seniors, and they're asking about their experience from when they were younger than 12. 91% reported having had a fun time at the Science Center. 65% reported having a more positive attitude towards science as a direct result of their Science Center experience, and 52% indicated that the Science Center increased their interest in studying science and or pursuing careers in science. And that's a pretty impressive long-term effect, that they've gotten similar results for 2 years in a row, and they're going to expand this coming year to a couple of other high schools. And I just think that is worthy of note. We always wonder, you know, what difference does it make, your experiences in early childhood? And I think some evidence that it does make a difference. So, and in line with that, I would like to also promote a program that they have started this year. It's called Membership Access Program. Families can sign up for a year for free membership if they are eligible for free or reduced cost lunch. And this is not just Tompkins County, but surrounding counties as well. It's called the Membership Access Program. You can call Chris at 272-0600, extension 19, for the information. It's also on the website. But I checked and found out that they've already had 120 sign-ups in just 2 months. And that's a 5% increase on their membership. So folks are already doing this. So that's free membership for a year if you are eligible for free or reduced school lunch. And I wanted to just comment on some matters relating to the IDA. Mr. Benkowski, I'm sorry you left. But many people know that the IDA abatements that are offered are only on the property tax that's considered increased value on a project that where there's a building expansion or a new building or new equipment put into a business. So, in fact, the property tax that's been paid previous to the expansion to the abatement does not go down. The abatement is only on essentially part of the increased value. So that's something everybody should know. There was an article recently. It was February 27th Journal, And I sent a note to Tim because there was a, actually Stephen Kimball from TCAD also sent a note from Tim to Tim Ashmore. There was a small but pretty significant error in reporting the dollars per, the cost per job. And that's obviously the basic point of the Industrial Development Agency is to create and retain jobs. So it matters how much in tax abatements we're paying for those jobs. And the error was that the state average is $4,500 per job, which when you think about it is actually pretty low. The Tompkins County number is $808 per job over the life of the IDA, which is amazingly low. So the mistake that was in the paper was that the state average was listed as $527, not $4,527. So that makes rather a difference. The report was about the comptroller's annual report on how IDAs are doing statewide. And I just, I went and looked at it, and I have some concerns about the report. First off, Comptroller DiNapoli was quoted as saying that the data provided by IDAs on jobs was inconsistent and incomplete. I would tell you that our experience locally has been that it can be very hard to get the job information from employers, especially as they've gone 5, 6, 7 years out from their initial abatement. And we, in fact, recently sort of tightened up the language on our policy and tried to make it a little more stringent and a little bit more of a stick as opposed to just a carrot when TCAD goes and tries to get that information. But it's something that's difficult to get. The reporting is something that needs to be done by the employers. Just finally, the comment about $4,500 per job statewide, I should tell you that statewide, the median cost per job is only $1,288. So if you think about it, the average is $4,500 and the median is under $1,300. What that says statistically is that there are a few outliers that are way more expensive. Half of the jobs cost less than $1,300 per job in the state through the IDAs, and I think that that's a pretty good record. So that's just a little bit of information. The whole report is available if anybody's interested.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Martha.
Quick comment.
Yes, Frank, quickly.
Perhaps it was as a result of your getting a hold of Tim, but I noticed the same thing about the IDA job number, and the journal did correct that.
Right. I know, but it's always, you know, I know it's how they do it, but it's always hard to see that. It doesn't get as much play as the original article.
Are there other legislators who wish to? Dooley Kiefer and then Will?
This is in the nature of an alert. March 28th this year is the day that has been set for Earth Hour. You may remember that last year our legislature issued a proclamation. I hope we will do it again at our next meeting. But I wanted to let people who may be watching or listening know that it's March 28th from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. And the concept is simple. If you support action to combat global warming, turn off your lights for that hour.
Okay. Thank you. Will Burbank.
Thank you, Michael. About a week or so ago, we had new things appear around the county, which were brightly colored yellow bags. You probably know what I'm talking about. Inside these bags, which appeared at almost everybody's mailbox or doorstep, were phone books. And these particular ones came from the Yellow Book Company. And they looked like this on the inside. Unfortunately, these were the third such thing to arrive this year, or maybe I guess the first one was in November, and that was the Verizon, and then somewhere in January we got the Haynes, and now we have the Yellow Book. And to no one's great surprise, how many phone books do you really need? many people were not picking these up. And after they had sat in my neighborhood for several days, I called the company to see whether they were planning to come back and retrieve the ones that were not picked up, and was told, no, why would we do that? They finally put me through to the distributor, a very, very nice woman, who agreed to come around and pick up my one book if I didn't really want it. And I said, no, I'm really talking broader. Could you try to go out and go to those areas where you've put them? Because this is essentially litter. It wasn't meant to be litter, but it has become litter. And it's a form of commercial litter. So, long story short, and they were very, very nice people of Yellow Book. The distributor did agree to go out and get their deliverer to try to pick up as many as they could. If you are listening to this and they're still in your neighborhood, know that if you open the book and call the 800 number that's right in the front, there's a good chance somebody will come out to your neighborhood and do the same. The broader thing is that I think that we have a hole in our littering laws which doesn't address this. And I think if we have commercial level, large-scale delivery of things that people don't want, we need some mechanism to hold the companies that are doing this responsible. And I've talked with Jonathan, and I guess he's going to be looking into see if there's anything that could be done at the county level. I've also talked with Barb Ekstrom over solid waste. This is very recyclable, but if it's in the bag, it's not. So just taking it out is a cost, and that should be borne by the companies that are putting it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Carol, can I just suggest that we start a movement and get Arlo Guthrie to write a song about it?
Great.
Other legislators wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Seeing none, we'll move on. We do have a report from a municipal official. Looks like Pat Leary is here from the town of Ithaca. Pat?
Greetings.
Welcome.
Duly elected chair. Duly. CEO Bruce Estes is here, the unelected chair, and all the representatives from the town of Ithaca, most of whom represent only a sliver. We have been very busy in the town, so busy that we've begun meeting as a full board twice a month. At our last mini-meeting, the majority of the town board, by 5-2, including the supervisor and with the five, expressed a disinclination to pursue any further study of consolidation with the city of Ithaca. Peter Stein, as many of you know, has been involved on a joint committee to consider the issue, along with shared services, but the emphasis in the draft report was definitely on consolidation. Peter wanted us to pursue a $50,000 state grant to continue exploring consolidation. It would have required the town to kick in $2,500 and the city the same. Only one other board member was interested in applying for the grant. Meanwhile, our comprehensive plan steering committee held an open house for neighborhood associations, which was very well attended and very positive. In other intermunicipal news, you may have read in the Ithaca Journal that the special joint committee of the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility was undecided about accepting the hydrolysate animal waste from the Cornell Vet School. That was not accurate. We were ready to go with a resolution that the committee had asked me to write accepting the Cornell waste, but not all committee members had read the several volumes of environmental impact statements from 2002, 2003, and 2004. So we felt that we should before voting on a resolution. So we've been passing around copies and expect to vote later this month. One small correction to something Dooley said at your last meeting. She cited a Wisconsin study that showed that the infectious proteins separate out to sludge, and she commented that the alkaline destruction process was not even really necessary. That's not really true. The actual study, which I have here, is titled Persistence of Pathogenic Prion Protein During Simulated Wastewater Treatment Processes. And It goes on to say in the abstract, prions are highly resistant to degradation and to many disinfection procedures, suggesting that if prions enter wastewater treatment systems, that the prions could survive conventional wastewater treatment. Here we report the results of experiments examining the partitioning and persistence of prions during simulated wastewater treatment processes, including anaerobic sludge digestion, which is what they use at the sewer plant. So it's at, incubation with activated sludge did not result in significant prion degradation. A large fraction survived anaerobic sludge digestion. Our results suggest that if prions were to enter municipal wastewater treatment systems, most would partition to active sludge solids, but survive mesophilic anaerobic digestion and be present in treated biosolids. So the good news, bad news of that is that the solids do tend to separate out, but if any remain in the hydrolysate, the prions better have been destroyed before leaving Cornell because anaerobic digestion, which is what our sewer plant uses, does not destroy them. And the hydrolysate is 8.8% total solids as opposed to only 2% in ordinary septage. But as I say, the alkaline hydrolysis is pretty well known to destroy any of these protein molecules if you cook it for long enough. And we're asking for 6 hours. So finally, still on the docket, so to speak, are docks. Do we allow 50 feet or 40 feet? The question we're trying to resolve now is whether we can find a way to easily measure the depth of the water at the end of the dock and factor that into the regulations to better accommodate sailboats as opposed to just motorboats. And we have Peter Stein on that. And while he commented at the last meeting that it shouldn't be rocket science to figure it out, I'm still glad he's a physicist. Any questions?
Thank you, Pat. Questions, Kathy?
Hi, Pat. It's great to see you here. I have a question about that dense scientific stuff you said about the prions. Yeah. I read somewhere that prions are implicated in the Jacob...
Creutzfeldt disease? Yes, CDJ, yeah. It is mad cow disease,
thank
basically.
You. And so I can see why there's a little bit of concern about it. So did I understand you say correctly that the 6 hours that y'all are asking for would substantially eliminate? Or?
Yes. In every study that we've seen, including proposed state regulations for prion treatment facilities, 6 hours is considered the gold standard.
Thanks for bringing us that information. Okay. Appreciate it.
If there's no further questions or comments, thank you very much. Dooley?
I will comment to Pat separately. It's very tempting to do that, but
okay. Thanks. Thank you again, Pat. Martha Robertson.
Pat, it was a little hard to hear you. You said, I missed the beginning of what you said about consolidation with the city.
Right.
You said that you looked at the draft report and had decided not to go any further.
Right. Okay. We didn't think it was in the best interest of the town, basically.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks again. Thanks for coming by. We have no special presentation or discussion. I will remind committee chairs this is a great opportunity for every meeting. If you have a topic that you know is coming up in a month or so that needs discussion, to bring it to my attention, bring it to Kathy's attention, and we can indeed get it on the schedule so that we can have 10, 15-minute presentations in a rather methodical way before we take on issues and people can get information in a timely fashion. So let us know if you have topics coming that need that kind of time in front of the entire legislature. Regarding Chair's report, I have asked with Joe that we will have a monthly meeting of committee chairs, essentially for communication purposes and to coordinate countywide perspective. And we're also looking for quarterly meeting of department heads and legislators that will continue from our meeting in December. So I believe you've all gotten a message from Kathy Covert regarding possible dates for the next meeting, which is the very first few days of April. So please respond, both committee chairs, to that monthly meeting and all legislators to the proposed dates for the department head legislature meeting. I have no chair's appointments. Yes, Carol?
Yeah, Yeah, on the quarterly meetings, the last one was an evening meeting. Was there any discussion of the afternoon versus evening for those, or are you taking a poll on that?
The four dates and times that were proposed are afternoon, 3:30 to 5:30 range, trying to, based on our experience, when most legislators are available before evening meetings, but after possibly a shortened work day to join us, and same with department heads, so we have to come. But if you are responding and you have a modest suggestion for a change of time, you know, slightly earlier, slightly later, please let us know that. Move on to reports. County Administrator, Joe Mariano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 weeks ago, I spent a lot of your time to talk about the federal stimulus program. I expect to be mercifully brief tonight after taking a lot of your time last time. I do want to thank you for that. I think that was an important exercise that was done that allowed us to move a stimulus package to decision makers in Albany very quickly. We followed up on that immediately. So, again, I think this county can be very proud of the fact that we were able to put together a very professional, concise reflection of the community's request to the stimulus package very quickly. So I appreciate the time that you spent on this 2 weeks ago and prior to that in getting that plan to that point. The only thing that I have to talk about tonight, we've really talked about in committee already, and that's a more detailed impact assessment of the state budget. I did make a presentation to the budget committee a couple of weeks ago to go through really the next level of detail beyond just the top level information that we provided over the past several weeks, and then emailed to, I think, each of you a copy of the report that we submitted at committee. So I won't go through the details of that report tonight. I did circulate hard copies, so all of you have it. If there are any questions about it, I'm certainly prepared to answer those. Very quickly, by way of summary and update, if you look at the report, you'll find that there's a $2.7 million impact that's been calculated, and that assumes that the governor's budget would be approved intact. As we've said often, it won't be. But it is based on that. There are certain things, and we've noted this at the beginning of the report, that it doesn't include because it can't. There are some things that at this point just aren't quantifiable. The effect of moving from a reimbursement plan to a block grant plan, for example, in DSS administration and in youth. Very difficult, probably impossible to quantify right now. So we've noted that. Some things aren't in here. TC3, for example, the impact, a large one, is not in this report. However, it does, I think, capture most of the impact of the budget on us. $1.7 million of the $2.7 relates to our own budget. The other million relates to agencies that are in a variety of respects related to the county. The last point on the budget, just by way of update, we now have heard, and I think I reported this last time, that the governor has suggested that the $500,000 cut in CHIPS funding to us, the highway maintenance funding, be restored as a part of the overall effort to stimulate the economy and get brick and mortar going. So a $500,000 cut is included in our report. The governor himself has said, I want to see that restored by the legislature. I received an email from Alice Cole today regarding the bioterror cut, which was to have been made this year, $111,000, was to have been effective January 1st. Aid has now been extended through the planned expiration of the grant, which I believe is at the end of August. So that's good news in terms of sustaining that program through its intended grant termination date. Finally, and we've talked about this already as well, as a part of the federal stimulus plan, the federal government is trying to aid states by increasing the federal share of Medicaid costs. And in states like New York, where counties bear a portion of the cost, counties will share in that benefit. We are beginning to get numbers now from the state on that. They look to be a little less than originally projected, but over the next 2 years, the expected range of savings is from $3.25 to $4 million. That will come over the next 2 years, slightly front-loaded for this year, and at the end of 2 years, that form of savings will be gone. So essentially, it's a one-shot benefit spread over 2 years. So I think those are the updates that we've received on the state budget since we have last spoken about it. So we're here to take any questions, and we'll continue to brief committee on the details of the budget as it develops.
Thank you, Joe. Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, the copy that you distributed today.
Yes.
Does that, Kathy Covert sent to us by, you ready for this, folks? By email. The NYSAC report that also spoke of the impacts. The numbers, I haven't had a chance to compare that latest one. Was it the 20th, Kath?
Yes.
I haven't had a chance to compare that one to this one with numbers as they apply to our county. But is this more current than that one would have been, do you think?
I think this is more detailed than that would be. I think NYSAC will talk about general categories of reduction. This is the result of a survey, our survey of departments, to find out by specific program where these impacts will occur. This is dated in that it reflects the proposals made by the governor when his budget was first released several months ago now. So it's not been updated for the potential restoration of CHIPS money and things like that.
Well, the one Kathy distributed is more current then. Because I had an email sent around to all the departments that report to Health and Human Services to review that list and give us their comments. I'll report on that at my committee.
Okay, but they should be very close.
The other question I had for you was we received word, and it was in the journal, that there were certain items that were listed as member items that were cut with regard to certain senators. The one that, I mean, there are a number that are troubling because of it covers an array of items, but the one that's really troubling was the $25,000 potential cut to the town of Danby, which was going for their aquifer study and their aquifer work. And the county has set aside that capital program money for that. And what Rick called me immediately on Saturday, Rick Dietrich, and was in a complete panic because they've already started, they're already doing the work. And they're thinking about having to stop the contractor from moving ahead. The county's got a committed piece of that too. And also the USGS has a committed piece of that too. Have either, maybe it's unfair to ask it this way, Mike, but it's related to the budget. Have either Joe or Ed, have you heard anything whatsoever about either restoration of that money or what the effect, other than bringing the whole project to a halt, which we really would rather not see done, do you have any update on that? Or?
We're in the process of talking to USGS to see if they can continue on that under those conditions.
Will that bring, have we stopped the county's piece already?
We haven't stopped anything pending discussions with USGS.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry to drag that on, but.
Any further questions for Joe?
I have one other item.
Yes.
I'm requesting that we meet again in executive session after this meeting to talk about labor negotiations.
If there's no further questions, Dooley.
A quick one. The federal money that you mentioned that will last for 2 years, it's front-loaded.
Yes.
Are the 2 years federal fiscal years you're talking about, or our calendar years?
Our calendar years. And it's a relatively complicated formula, but approximately 55% of the money that I talked about, of the $3.25 million at the low end, will be received in this year, our calendar year 2009, the balance of it next year. So it's a bit front loaded.
Thank you, Joe. Martha?
Joe, thank you for putting that intro on the front of that. I know we don't have a sense of how much might be cut out of the DSS administration, but for perspective, how much do we spend on that? And then how much is, what do they usually reimburse us?
Yeah, I'm going from memory, Martha. I think it's $800,000. My recollection is $800,000, but I would want to check on that. The concern is that the block grant will fund certain of those expenses that are currently recovered and not others. So, for example, the safety net program, which is one of the two welfare programs, currently we get a 50% reimbursement from the state. That would go to zero because the use of federal money is prohibited. The second is food stamp administration, where it looks like the block grant won't allow recovery of food stamp administrative costs. So I'd have to get you the right number for how much we currently receive, but it's a significant structural change in the way the state funds these administrative expenses.
And at the last budget meeting, Patricia Carey made a major point about how their caseload is going up. So the problem with, you know, if we have to reduce staff because we're not getting reimbursement for part of those salaries, then it's a terrible collision course. Thank you.
Thanks, Martha. On to our report from County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I have no report. I did hand out both the letter and a memorandum on our recent litigation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions, and if people want to bring that up in the executive session, we can do that as well.
Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
I thought I'd mention a little noticed provision of the stimulus package was the, I believe it was at the Congressman Rangel introduced some, put some language in the bill which increased the threshold for tax-exempt financing limits for small issuers. Previously, you had banks, financial institutions could take tax deductions for holding and investing in municipal bonds. And so we were limited to $10 million a year. And because the county is issued and renewed over $10 million a year, we have not been able to really take advantage of that in most years. They've increased the threshold to $30 million. And so we will get the advantage of that because the issue which we got a very attractive rate on was qualified for the financial industry to buy the banks. But even though it wasn't purchased by a bank, but we will be going out to market before the end of the year, probably for some financing for road improvements. And that will come in handy because normally we would have exhausted our limit for the year.
What was the dollar amount again, Dave?
Well, we issued $6.5 million of notes at a rate of 0.73%.
No.
The limit went from 10 million,
10 million
30
to 30.
10 to 30.
10 to 30, which is really incredible because to take advantage of that. And if the market ever settles down where financial institutions are back in the market aggressively, they are they're taking care of their customers, but not in the sense that they're really being ultra-competitive in their pricings. And the other thing, we're getting a few extra dollars as a result of tobacco. The tobacco companies put money in escrow, and so they're finally releasing some protested payments that go back to 2003. So the county will get a share of that money, so to speak, a windfall. And there might be a couple of other instances because there's it has to do with the belief that the formula that the master settlement agreement was incorrectly calculated in the annual payments made by tobacco companies. So they put money into escrow, and they're finally releasing some of it.
Frank?
David, the county tax receipts should be coming in rather regularly, have been anyway. Are we pretty much on target with that, or do you see any track record of people not being able to pay? And secondly, do you have any feel for where we might be on foreclosures?
Well, our foreclosure, we had 17 properties in foreclosure, and I think we are 16 now. And that's really low, and I expect that it'll probably be in a neighborhood of 12 by the time we get around to taking title. We received an awful lot of money, and I was doing analysis this morning about how we compare with, because we have to hold aside money for uncollected taxes. And I've come to the conclusion, and I started a discussion with the auditors, that we actually had too much set aside for that purpose, because we have had very small amounts of taxes that we had to write off over the last 5 years. And I was comparing our ratios to other counties, and ours is on the high end. Like, we have 10%. We have a value of 10% of our tax receivable set aside for uncollected taxes that we have to write off. And it's all over the place. And that's probably too high. Mm-hmm. So the answer is, in the amount of our deferred tax revenue, the amount of taxes we don't expect to receive within a short period after the year, is substantially lower than other counties. Our figure is about $1.3 million out of a tax receivable of about $5 million, where other counties might be 50 to 60%, meaning it takes them a lot longer to realize the collection. So we haven't seen any...
I'll keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah.
There's no further questions. Thank you, David. We have no other county staff reports, so we'll move on to the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial, but can pass in a single vote. I'll read the appointment list, and then looks like there's about six resolutions from various committees. For appointments to Soil and Water Conservation District, we have Greg Stevenson and Frank Proto. To the Ernest Warren Supreme Court Library Board of Trustees, Julie Kiefer serving again. To the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, Neil Stevenson. And to the Water Resources Council, Greg McConnell. In terms of resolutions, from the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution A, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Engineers for design and bidding services of Runway 32 Localizer Array Relocation Project, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution B, award of bid, miscellaneous improvements at the Recycling and Solid Waste Center. Resolution C, authorization to execute funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, bridge painting, various locations. Resolution D, this is off, okay. And when we take it up under planning, development, environmental quality, that's the revised version. Resolution E, authorization to enter into an agreement with the Town of Dryden to implement the Agricultural and Farmland Protection Implementation Grant and co-hold a conservation easement on the Jerry Dell Farm. And Resolution F, this is from Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the Community Foundation. Who'd like to move the consent agenda? Frank moves it. Carol seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. We'll proceed to committee reports, but I see people are here, I believe, for possibly planning, development, and environmental quality, the agreement between City and Cornell regarding housing affordability. So let's start with that, which is Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. The Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee met on the 18th of February, and we had a full agenda. We had many good discussions. We had a report from Julia Maddock on the economic stimulus plan and how it's working with workforce development. We probably spent most of our time talking about the resolution that we have before us tonight with the agreement between the city and Cornell University. And Anyway, we had updates from different groups, but I think that but the substance of what happened at the committee meeting are in the resolutions here, so I think I will just move forward with them. I'd like to start with Resolution D, support for the continuation of the Empire Zone Program, the revised resolution that should have been in your red folder.
That's been moved. Is there a second? Duly keyed for seconds. Mm-hmm. Is there discussion? Frank Proto.
Pam, the reason I asked that this be pulled is that for the benefit of the public and also with regard to what Mr. Benkowski was reporting on regarding the IDA, you may, if you feel like you should, you may want to highlight some of the positives that the Empire Zone has achieved and why we ought to send this resolution on to the state.
Well, Frank, I think that if you would like to do that, you are welcome to do it. I did not bring the highlights of what they did. We had a discussion at the committee, and I felt that this was worthy of moving forward. So,
how about if we ask the chairman of the particular advisory board for the Empire Zone to highlight it?
Many highlights embedded in the...
Yeah, but the public doesn't know that.
Correct.
Read the six whereas. One, two, three. Okay, I'll read the sixth whereas. Whereas in calendar year 2007, Empire Zone incentives leveraged an investment of over $27.6 million by Tompkins County's 33 certified businesses, and those firms employed 2,208 people and created 204 new jobs in 2007.
That's been further discussion. Thank you, Pam. Martha and then Nathan.
I would point out that the Empire Zone program has been, it's entirely state funded. The benefits are all provided by the state. So these are incentives that we get to enjoy locally, but don't come out of property tax as the IDA abatements, property sales and mortgage tax, but the IDA uses local incentives, and the Empire Zone is a state program, so that's a great benefit to us. And I guess the governor has been quoted in the paper as saying now maybe he thinks it's a good idea to keep the Empire Zone, even though his budget proposal attacked them and cut them out. So we're actually what was done was to increase the requirements of how many jobs per dollar abated. So it's I hope it goes forward. I mean, hope they stay in the program.
I have Nathan, then Mike Sigler, then Frank.
I'd like the record to show that I'm supporting this because I believe that in Tompkins County this program is run well and that it has yielded results. However, I have serious reservations about the Empire Zone program generally across the state. I think that it has been very costly to taxpayers and that there is a lack of accountability statewide when it comes to the Empire Zone program. And so I'm voting for this resolution because of what we do well here. But I have real big questions about how it is throughout the state.
Thank you. Mike Sigler?
I wanted to just say that I'm voting for the continuation of the Empire Zone for the simple fact that although it did have much publicized problems in other counties that had this earlier than us, our county has run it extremely well. I also want to point out that I would like to see the Empire Zone actually expanded to make the whole state an Empire Zone as opposed to having these little carved out areas of Empire Zones. I think it's pretty clear from the Empire Zones that if you lower taxes, you will create jobs, 204 new jobs, in fact, last year. And if that were to be put across the state, that would be an excellent stimulus, I think. So just wanted to point that out.
Frank, and then Mike Hattery.
Thanks, Mike. I want to echo Nathan's comments. One of the reasons I was not supportive of this entire program a couple of years ago when it was brought to us was because of the poor record that it had statewide. There were very few controls on it, and the jobs that were supposed to be forthcoming, dependent on, you know, how much is two and two, how you counted the jobs. But I think the reports that we've had are that they do a very good job locally. What I think also precipitated this resolution, and what I thought I heard Martha say, was that it may not be true any longer that the governor was proposing retroactive changes that would have affected some of the businesses that already received this, and that has been withdrawn, I think, is what I heard you say, Martha. If that's true, that's wonderful, because it really would be a kick in the teeth to any business that has bought into this program and has qualified and they're doing the job, and now they've got to go back and be judged by a different set of rules, which is totally unfair. So I'm going to join Nathan with the same reservations about supporting this tonight.
I remind people this was a resolution on consent. Mike Hattery.
One of the things I think that is good about the Empire Zone is that it has been around long enough that the internal accountability criteria have improved with the administrative oversight. So I think, while I think there were a lot of abuses early on, I think, and I won't speak for the whole state, but I think the program now has a fairly good internal set of accountability criteria. And I think one of the address your question, Mike Sigler, for your proposal, there's a whole bunch of things. So we kicked this around at the last zone meeting, which was Monday, and there's a whole bunch of proposals on the table, one of which would be to make zones countywide. So who knows what's really going to happen.
Thank you. If there's no further comment, are we ready to vote on the revised version, Resolution D? All in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Pam?
Okay. Resolution K, authorization to enter into an agreement with the City of Ithaca and Cornell University to develop and administer the Housing Affordability Program and the Housing Trust Program, and I so move.
Thank you, and seconded by Martha. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, this has been a ongoing process. It's been going, I don't know how long. I mean, I'm certainly coming in at the end, and a lot of people have put a lot of time into this over the last about a year and a half or 2 years. I know Ed Marks has, and Martha, and Carol Chalk, and Nels Bone for the city, and
Jean Lassesse.
I'm sorry, Jean?
Jean Lassesse.
Jean Lassesse. And anyway, we certainly appreciate all of their hard work. It has truly been a compromise and long discussions, and everybody seems to feel that we have come up with a working document here and a working program. So I just wanted to commend this and recommend this resolution.
Thank you. Any further comments? Martha, then Frank, and Dooley.
I would second the compliments and thanks to the staff. I hope that the city will be prepared to take swift action next month when it's on their agenda. I also really want to thank Cornell for the funding that this represents and the commitment. And we know that times are very hard, and we understand that some of their initiatives that they had started out of the box might take a little longer. The employee support, mortgage support, and other things may take a little longer to get going than they originally thought. But they're not backing down from this commitment. And it's very significant. And Ed tells us that there are developers. We said you get a couple calls a week with developers ready to take advantage of this. I mean, it seems like unbelievable in this market, but in this economy. But our market, our housing market, there's still demand. There's still a need. And this will truly help out. And I just really hope that really want to stand by Cornell. I know they're having to defend this against a number of people who are worried about this financial commitment, but it's a great thing for the community.
Thanks, Martha. Frank, and then Dooley.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I have several comments I'd like to make about the First, about the resolution. My first question is, are we the first of the three entities to consider the resolution, or neither Cornell nor the city have? The city hasn't passed this yet, have they?
No.
And Cornell hasn't signed on yet. Okay. In the second resolved, at the end of the second resolved, it says that the county attorney and the commissioner of planning and public works, by the way, the committee suggested part of that addition, so that was, it was good that we did that. But what I was a little bit concerned about is just a clarification. There wasn't anything in here, unless I completely missed it, that said that there would be a periodic report to the legislature. Do we need that in the resolution? Since this is a program that's one of the first of its kind, if it isn't the first of its kind, I think the legislature ought to be given a report from time to time, and perhaps the planning commissioner is planning to do that anyway. I mean, if we asked you, you would do it, but unless it's in the resolution, doesn't need to be in the resolution, as long as we have that understanding, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't see it in the resolution, and I think I see Ed nodding his head that it is an understanding, probably on an annual basis.
Well, no, I think it ought to be more frequent than that.
Okay. So
there's two grant cycles per year.
The other items that I just wanted to bring to your attention, and they're a concern to me because of the IDA and because of some of the other programs where we front money, taxpayer money, to do certain things, whether it's coming from the CDBG grant or anything else. It all originates as taxpayer money. And perhaps in a round when we can consider changes, although I should have spoken up sooner, and I apologize, Gene, that I didn't do this sooner. Bear with me with this explanation, Mike. On the IDA, if we issue an exemption of any sort, regardless of what part of the property is taxed, the organization or entity enjoys that tax exemption for whatever duration is agreed to. Good, bad, or indifferent, that's the game plan. If the owner of the project sells the project, whether it's during the exemption period or at the end, generally they sell an appreciated product. Unfortunately, the taxpayer doesn't benefit from the appreciated sales price. They may eventually participate in the appreciated property tax piece, but often we give the exemptions and the taxpayer doesn't receive any part of that sales price if it is appreciated. And there's a particular project I have in mind, which is in downtown Ithaca, that this happened with. We that have exemptions, and I mean, in a matter of disclosure, although you know it anyway, we receive an exemption on our farm, not an exemption, we receive the ag assessment on our farmland. And we're required to keep it as farmland and keep it in that use because that's what generates the ag assessment. If we decide to change the use, and I know Jim Dennis has been after me for years because he has a particular commercial project he wants to put on my property. And he's been after me to sell it to him. But if I sell it to him for the commercial use, that changes the use. And the ag assessment has to be revised back, it was 8 years, to whatever the assessment would have been. And if I'm smart enough, I'll build that into the sales price to Jim so he gets stuck paying the adjusted amount. But somebody's got to pay that increased assessment because you've changed the use. You haven't kept it in agriculture. My concern here is basically the same thing. That's in fairness to the taxpayer because you've changed the use of the property. Here, we don't benefit at all. We're giving an exemption. generally you sell a piece of appreciated property and the taxpayer gets zipped. Perhaps in the next round, Gene, when we're looking at this again, it certainly would be nice to have a provision in there that perhaps we can have some sort of a formula where we can enjoy that kind of a participate in the sales price. It won't happen on the land because whatever entity ends up owning the land will most likely be a not-for-profit and probably might pay pilot or might pay nothing. I don't know the answer to that. But this would be on the appreciated value of the home or the apartment or the condo, whatever it happened to be. The second item is there a penalty for selling the property too fast? Are we requiring that whoever enjoys this exemption or this break stay in the property for a certain number of years so that there might be a chance to recoup? But I don't know the answer to that. Is there? I didn't see a requirement in there, and maybe there doesn't need to be, but should there be?
I don't think there is, but maybe Gene or Ed can speak to that.
Well, there's no exemption, tax exemption per se, implied in this program. What there is that the trust program would put the land into trust in a non-profit ownership more likely than not, as you stated.
Right.
And part of putting the land with a house on it into trust would be an agreement that would limit the amount of appreciation that could be taken at sale of the property in order to keep it affordable. So basically the way that program normally is structured is that part of the appreciation stays with the land in order that the house may be resold at an affordable price. So in effect, the benefit gets passed on to the next qualified, affordable homeowner. So there is no windfall at any point in the process under the housing trust concept. Right. The house remains with a shared equity kind of arrangement.
Oh, so there may be no need to do what I suggest.
Ed, why don't you stay there? There's six people who are...
Well, I'm not done yet.
Okay.
Sorry. Ed, is there going to be an opportunity to develop... Will there be a local preferred developer list developed that we...
This will be an application process. Anybody that qualifies under the program rules can apply, and it'll be a competitive process that'll be evaluated. So anybody who submits a proposal will have to meet the criteria in the view of the oversight committee and the review committee.
Well, I have an offer from Brooke Greenhouse, who is the 49% owner of Cougar Country Homes. I can't remember the woman's name that is the owner of it, but he's also one of the directors and the past president of the Ithaca Builders Exchange, and he would love to book someone to come out. Apparently no one went out to speak to their 65 members who are builders who might be interested in participating.
There will be public, once this is established and everything is finalized and in place, there will be a pre-grant announcement public information session or at least one, or if not more than one, to get the word out to all the people that might be interested.
The last part, I just want to raise a question. Perhaps somebody else can address it. I think somebody else may be in the ballpark on this, but do I understand from the reading that Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service might be the entity that does the outreach and perhaps the review of projects countywide?
No. The Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, along with other non-for-profits, might end up being applicants to this program. They would not be involved in the review of applications if they were going to be potentially an applicant.
How about administration of the program?
No. What you may be referring to is they are working on establishing the housing trust, which might be a partner in terms of applications to this program.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
I'll just read the list so people know where they stand and don't get impatient. I have Dooley, then Mike Hattery, then Carol Chalk, then Kathy Luce Herrera, then Martha, then Pam. So, Dooley?
Thank you. I had hoped to get a revised version of the resolution in, but I only got to check with Jean yesterday, and I've been working on other resolutions. So I have a few refinements with the resolution in the third whereas and the fourth whereas, which refer to the Tompkins County Housing Needs Assessment and the strategy. I would like to have inserted the dates of those two documents, and I'm not completely sure what those correct dates are, but I'm sure that our staff can put them in.
That's friendly.
In the fifth whereas, I'd like to insert the word both. Would jointly fund both a community housing affordability program and a community housing trust program. Just the word both. In the next whereas, I would like to insert words in the first line. The community housing affordability program is proposed as a locally funded and administered program because it doesn't exist yet. It's being proposed. So these are just trivial clarifying words.
So far, those seem to be friendly from the mover and seconder.
In the second resolve, I would like to see us simply reverse the words approves and accepts to read accepts and approves, since accepting is more trivial and approving is more important. But in that same second resolve, in the fourth line, I had trouble understanding who might make revisions and when. And Jean clarified for me that these revisions would really be during the approval process, which is what we're going through tonight and which the city and Cornell have yet to go through. So to make that clear, I'd like to insert the words, provided that during the approval process, revisions may be made to the memorandum of understanding, etc.
Provided, where's the provide?
In the fourth line of the second resolve.
Provided that what?
During the approval.
During the approval process, revisions may be made.
Okay.
And finally, on the next to the last resolve, there's some extraneous words in the fourth line. It says renewed at a rate of $100,000 per year. And then the subsequent words, for additional two-year terms, should be struck. I think that was an artifact from some other version.
Okay.
That was my understanding from Jean.
Wait, I'm sorry. You're not coming across all the way over here.
Second
to last resolved, the fourth line, strike the words for additional two-year terms. They're not relevant to what's in the rest of that resolve.
I'm seeing the mover and seconder approving of those changes. So those are friendly.
Those were the simple ones. In the attached documents themselves, I went back and reread the NOFA, the Notice of Funding Availability, which is just something being recommended to the Oversight Committee. But I noticed that there was a simple way for me to deal with something that has troubled me all along, and that's the point awarding system, because the points given in this by way of recommendation total 100. And I thought the only way you could adjust that was by subtracting points from one to add them to another. But if I stepped back and thought, no, there's no reason that has to be the case. The scoring criteria could add up to 120 points instead of 100. And that would let me leave alone the number one criterion, broad range of household characteristics served, which could still be up to 40 points, but it would allow smart growth and green building to be raised from 10.
I'm sorry, I'm not.
So you're looking on page six.
I'm talking about the notice of funding availability.
Can you refer to the page number? So page six at the top, category two, smart growth. you'd like to change the points from 10 points to 20?
This is of the NOFA, not the MOU.
This is the Notice of Funding Availability.
Just take it.
On page 5, where it refers to the 8 scoring criteria.
You're proposing changing the scoring criteria?
As a recommendation from the county to the Oversight Committee, because we as a county are on record very much in support of smart growth and green building. And by changing the scoring from 100 to 120 points, saying maximum 120 points, and changing those two categories from 10 to 20, that's what I would like our county to be recommending. This is not a finished deal. This is just a recommendation from one of the three partners to the yet-to-be-established Oversight Committee.
Make your motion. If it's not friendly, they'll have to make an amendment.
Well, I hope I've explained it clearly enough. But
so page 6 and 7, you want to take, on this number 2, smart growth, it should say up to 20 points, mm-hmm. not 10. And page 7, on number 5, utilization of green building practices, up to 20 points.
And then on page 4, 5, it would raise it up to 120 total.
Okay.
I accept that.
That's fine with me.
Well, I move it. I don't have to move it. Thank you.
It seems like it's now incorporated into a revised version. If someone wants to change it out of the revised version and make it an amendment, they can. Dooley, are you done with your proposed changes? Just a second, Carol. Are there any other proposed changes before we...
I had a couple of them. Others are very small.
Okay, just to clarify that last item, looks like it was friendly. Kathy, clarification.
Okay, so if we're adding 20 points, I'm sorry I'm so slow about this, but this is verbally added on the floor. Where do they come from? Where are they being added? Because there's a whole formula here, and I'm sorry I didn't follow how you've proposed to change it by adding an extra 20% of points. Where are they going? 5, 6, 7, 8, all just anywhere?
I believe on page 6, item 2, the number would be changed from 10 to 20.
Okay. Smart growth.
On page 7, item 5, the number would be changed from 10 to 20.
So what you're proposing is emphasizing smart growth and green building practices by 20% more than the original formula that was agreed to by the other two partners.
That's the proposal. It's been friendly.
I'm just trying to articulate it in a way that makes sense to me.
I wouldn't have said 20%. Yes, I'm changing the points, but not by that percentage.
Well, whatever the math is, it sounds like a substantial change to me.
It gives those two more weight. That's right.
It's not percent. Doesn't have. It's a scoring, a rating that could add up to 74 if we wanted, or 150. So the idea is.
I'm going to go back to our speaking order. That's now been accepted as friendly. If someone wants to change that under their order to amend it to take it out, they can do that on their turn. I have Mike Hattery next.
Well, yeah, I have
I'll defer to Carol because I think she...
Yeah, she's next.
This wasn't what I was in the order for, but I'm trying to understand if this was proposed as something that we're recommending to the Program Oversight Committee that they consider, and it's not being added as something that we require.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, back to our speaking order, Mike Hattery.
I don't think I have a question for Ed, but he might want to clarify my assumptions here if I'm wrong. I am not going to support this resolution, and one of the things that concerns me most about this, and I expressed this in committee, and while I'm at saying I expressed that in committee, is there some reason why we don't, as we normally do, have the votes in committee at the end of this resolution?
If it's unanimous, we don't put the votes.
Well, I voted against it.
Well, it may be an oversight then.
On budget?
Oh.
Thanks for noting that.
I'm concerned about the a number of things in terms of both need and vetting with the construction industry. But most importantly, I'm concerned and do not like the trust portions of this, where I'm voting as a county legislator to create an entity, a yet-to-be-named nonprofit organization, that will hold portions of the value of parcels in the communities I represent. Not knowing who the makeup of the board of that yet-to-be-named nonprofit organization is, that will be holding the lease portion, the land portion of housing parcels, potentially in communities in my district. And I have no guarantee that they will have, unlike many community land trusts that represent a settled place community, I have no guarantee that they will be able to reflect in perpetuity any sense of the interest of the communities, real on-the-ground communities that are in my district. And I wouldn't want this, and I wouldn't want somebody else. Ithaca Neighborhood Housing is mentioned a number of times, and I'm not, you know, trying to stick holes in them in particular. But, for example, I wouldn't want Ithaca Neighborhood Housing making decisions on parcels and having a fixed interest in parcels and their board making decisions, whoever is on that board in the future, about transactions, about parcels in neighborhoods in the communities I represent. That's just not a situation I want to see happen in perpetuity.
Okay. Carol is next, and then Kathy.
Yeah, I am supporting this. You know, for many years, over a period of many years, affordable housing was identified by the county, by many entities in town, the newspapers, as the number one need in the county. And people have stepped up and said, what can we do about this after talking about it for many years? And homeownership is recognized as sort of one of the most important things you can do to make a difference in somebody's life, to make people's lives work more smoothly. And I think that we jumped into the details of this a little bit quickly for people maybe watching from home or here on other issues. So I just wanted to go back for a second to the very basics of what this is doing, which is entering into a partnership initially here with the City of Ithaca and Cornell University, but hopefully eventually being able to open this up to other private employers and municipalities who might want to participate to do two things in this initial iteration of this, to make sure that when loans are made to people to buy houses, that a portion of the value that gets put in because they are getting assistance to buy that first-time home or to buy that home stays permanently affordable, to sort of mitigate the effects, the ups and downs of the market that we're seeing right now, that, you know, those who happen to buy a house at the bottom of the market and sell it at the top did get a windfall, and the next family didn't necessarily get to keep that property, to occupy that property as affordably. And this will help mitigate that problem. And then secondly, to encourage just the planning of projects that will build more affordable housing. And at the point that those applications are being made, you know, many entities will be able to apply for the funds. And then once those projects are designed and planned, private builders will be able to get those contracts to build the properties. So this translates to assistance at many levels in many ways. And then these two elements are the only pieces we're moving forward with right now. But they were part of a larger vision that we're hoping to encourage in the future, that the large employers in the area will support many ways of supporting their employees with housing in many ways, including with loans, although they're not required to with this particular agreement.
So we're hoping this will be a long, fruitful partnership between these three entities. Frank referred to the next iteration. There are a lot of details here that took a long time to work out, and there are many other ways you could have worked out these details, and I think over these first 2 years and then 6 years, there'll be an opportunity to see how this one works and to make changes in the future. You know, one change right now, this thing allows each of the three entities to maintain control over our own funds so that as awards are made, they will come back to us for approval. I'm hoping that in a future iteration of this, we can actually establish a fund that is a separate fund, as Mike Hattery suggested, where we will know what the board is and maybe help establish it ourselves. So I just wanted to say all that, and that's why I'll be supporting it. I also just want to make it clear that that I have consulted with Jonathan Wood about this. I do have a family connection to Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, and the determination was that at this stage, this is really just making this funding available to everybody. If at any point down the road, Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services applies for a particular grant under this program, and my relative would have a salary impacted by those funds, then I should abstain from voting. But at this point, I can vote. And unless that has changed, I will vote.
Thank you. We have six speakers. Our next two are Kathy and then Martha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to start out by saying this resolution, I think, as it stands, is pretty well written. I want to point out to people it's got six whereases and six resolves. The part that jumped out at me, because it's been kind of beaten into my head about the comprehensive plan, is that this is going after our goal about the 4,000 new housing units in the next 10 years. I know that's important. I was concerned that the changes that were going to be made would freak me out, and the changes that were proposed to the resolution, fine, no problem at all. Part of what's been going on with me around these kind of things where we have a group that's been shepherded for months and in some cases years by the planning department and by other members of staff to come to some kind of consensus and agreement, and then we throw a curveball at the end and it substantially changes it, and I was worried about that. People have explained it to me. Frankly, I'm for the two changes that are suggested. Again, though, I think about the principle of the thing and how much I would like it if I was part of these three partners that had been brought along step by step to come to some kind of agreement and to have the legislature in its almighty wisdom decide to throw in what could be seen by them, perhaps, as a substantial change. That it was articulated as an advisory change and an advisory capacity helps me a lot and allows me to be able to support it. I just have a question. I'm trying to be as brief as I can. The part in the third resolve talks about three representatives. I love representation. I think it's an important part of accountability. I heard what Mike Hadley was saying, and I think that there's a way that we need to be clear about our intentions. It says that Tompkins County will appoint three representatives to the Program Oversight Committee. Can somebody tell me a little bit more about what our intentions are
Of page two of your Memorandum of Understanding, which is included in our packets for this tonight. Top of page 2, section D, outlines each of the three partners'
and
representatives.
Could somebody just say what those are right now for the record so that there's not going to be a lot of misunderstanding later on as to what was intended and who's going to do the appointing and who it goes through and who it's responsible to? Because that does help a little bit
it is intended,
for those that are worried about it.
It is intended that at least one of the three Tompkins County representatives be a member of this body or a senior administrator from Tompkins County. The other two members, we have complete control of those three. Okay, we could have three from this body.
Is that a chair's appointment?
At this point, this body would have to decide that. It's not outlined in the memo or under my understanding. But the three would be at least one elected person or a senior administrator. Others could include financial institution reps or a real estate development rep or economic development. We get to choose. So It is up to us which three will sit on that body for the first period of time. Is that accurate, Gene and Ed? Okay. So if that's answered, we'll move on.
Well, it's not clear.
Yes.
And it's only because of my commitment to this in principle that I'm going to go forward with this and support it. But I just want to say it would be really great if, for example, the three entities could come up with a consensus and recommend back to us what they some more specifics about what they think what the makeup should be, and then we could be articulate right now or as soon as possible, you know, in the coming months about what we think the makeup should be, because I don't want there to be any misunderstanding a year and a half from now and say, we wanted it to be, our understanding was, and this is how these things start. So
okay.
That would help me a lot, and I think probably a lot of people would like it. So I'm going to support this, but let's clear that up as soon as we can, please.
Five speakers, Martha and then Pam.
I think in that paragraph D, I think it would be not appropriate for this MOU to tell each of the entities how to choose their representatives. The idea here is that we agree on the composition of the board, of the Program Oversight Committee, but it would be, you know, not appropriate for us to tell the city how they should choose their people, or us to tell Cornell, nor for them to tell us how we should choose our members, but I'm sure staff will come with a recommendation. It'll go through committee. It'll come, you know, to this body. That's sort of what the process is, and so I have no problem with that. I wanted to mention that I also have an answer to what I think was Frank's question, or one of them. The homeowners will pay property taxes. There's no question that anybody's exempt. The people who buy houses with the land trust, they're going to pay property taxes. That's not a question. And referencing Dooley's comments on the floor and changes, I've said this before. If we didn't allow ourselves to make changes on the floor, why would we bother approving anything here? I mean, we're supposed to be a deliberative body that allows ourselves to have thoughts and make suggestions. I think that's entirely appropriate. Certainly, it's what the city's doing and will do and reserves their right to do, and certainly Cornell has reserved its right to make changes through their process. So I think that's fine, and the changes are good. Finally, I would just mention that the whole point of this, and this I think maybe refers to Mike Cattery's concern, is that the private market is simply not creating affordable housing at the rate that people need it. Rolf Pendel, professor of Cornell planning and regional planning at Cornell, who did some studies for the Health and Human Services Committee with us back in 2003 on housing issues. His statement generally was that affordable housing in upstate New York is created by deterioration, that housing becomes affordable when it starts falling apart. And I know, go to my district, Ellis Hollow Road, you may think that that's some sort of a fancy neighborhood. There's housing right there in Ellis Hollow Road and throughout my district that is probably somewhat affordable because it's truly unsafe and inadequate. We need safe housing for people at all income levels, and we need it as soon as possible, and I hope we can move this quickly. Thank you.
I have Pam and then Greg.
Well, I realized that when I moved this, that I did not explain this closely enough, but it appears that since that time, it's been explained any number of times, and so I guess I don't need to do anything.
Okay, thank you. Greg, and then Frank.
I hadn't necessarily planned to comment on this, and did plan to support it. I think that changing the percentage points, or changing the points system, or maybe not changing the system, but changing the points so that a couple things, the smart growth and the utilization of green building practices are weighted more than other criteria, is unwise at this point. I think the point system that was there was pretty fair. It made smart growth and green building practices on par with permanent affordability, which is probably a pretty significant component of this, I would guess, and likelihood of success, which we probably are all hoping for too. We have smart growth 4 times the weight in points of than the likelihood of success column. I'm not sure that's such a great idea, and I'm not sure I can support it with those changes.
Thank you. I have Frank and then Leslie.
I think we're seeing government at its best, right? What is that? A camel is a horse designed by a committee? Anyway.
It's a cow.
The... Can just a simple... Where did Ed go? Did he duck out?
He's back in the...
Oh, okay.
He's hiding. He's hiding to an affordable community.
He's hiding
Ed
out.
Ed spends his life under the radar.
He's tired of holding his breath.
Can you, Ed, just simply, is the land going, regardless of who holds title or interest in the land, will the land generate property tax?
On affordable housing, that's really... potentially negotiable with the community, it says.
It's negotiable with the community?
The land part is potentially negotiable with the community. And the housing unit will pay full taxes on the value of the housing unit. The land is under affordable housing in New York State. Local municipalities have authority to approve some reduction on that. I don't know. But the housing unit will certainly pay full taxes on the housing unit.
Just because we're talking about the potential for a not-for-profit entity being the administrative piece or the holding piece that you mentioned before, that doesn't necessarily carry with it the imprimatur. It's not a quantum leap.
It's not an
property.
Absolute.
Oh. Okay, that's what I wanted to... Second, the document entitled Attachment 1, an excerpt from the Community Housing Collaborative. The first bullet is very explicit in that it says the plan and its implementation strategy encourages development in urban areas or growth nodes that are served by public transportation, water and sewer, municipal services, and businesses.
You're on page 7, attachment 1, people following?
Yes, page 7, attachment 1. Thanks, Mike. I think all along we've been aware that growth is trying to be steered towards areas where there is already infrastructure. My question, and again, it's a question I've been asking, not necessarily over and over again, but it's a question that needs to be asked. The communities in which growth of this type will not take place because they don't have these accoutrements, like particularly water and sewer, will there be some effort made to increase or induce housing in those areas?
Basically, any project can be proposed in any place in the county. The criteria that are in the NOFA that the review committee will use to rate them and rank them and score them are what's in the NOFA or what might be modified by the Program Oversight Committee as they refine the NOFA. But as you could see from reading that or even the discussion of that, there are many things that you can get points for. So you don't absolutely get approved for any specific single reason or absolutely not get approved for any specific reason. It's going to be how you rate overall on the scoring with your project.
There is
an intent, I think, to try to make this, smart growth is in there. And to the extent that you meet those criteria, you'll get those points. But there are points for other things as well. So,
I mean, it isn't an automatic no. It depends on the project. I would hate to see any community not be able to participate in some way or at least not be able to come to the table because they don't have water and sewer. But they may have a very viable project. may involve extending water and sewer or the potential for that. The last item I have, Ed, is what's the process for changing any of these pieces? Is it does that have to come back through, in our case, the Planning Committee and then the full legislature?
Well, if you're going to change the Memorandum of Understanding, it would. The resolution provides that, you know, in any substantive way. The resolution, I think, is pretty specific that the Memorandum of Understanding or the NOFA can be changed in minor ways as we get through each entity's review and sign-off process. Otherwise, we would never get it done. If we had to come back through every time somebody had a minor change for some reason, this could go on forever. So the idea is those minor changes can be done with review of Jonathan and myself. Substantive changes would have to come back here.
And we're making a commitment based on that contribution table for several years because of the $100,000 the county's kicking in and the other two entities appropriately. If at any point, according to the write-up that we reviewed in planning, if at any point one of the partners, if you will, decide that a particular project is one that they don't want to participate in, they still retain that veto power for their own money.
For their own funds.
Last item.
That was the second time you said last item.
I know, but this is Carol. Carol reminded me of this. This particular resolution and this project. I think Gene took out the mortgage housing part of it.
Yes.
So I don't have.
That was an FYI, essentially. That is now out of the actual MOU.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we have two more members who have asked to speak. I'd like to move to a vote. It's Leslin and Carol.
Ed, you answered one of my 40 questions. I want to look at the NOFA document, and I have some very simple questions. Could somebody please explain to me the Community Housing Affordability Program, page 2, pre-development costs associated with residential and mixed-use real estate development projects. Can somebody please tell me what mixed-use real estate
is? Under the second large paragraph, the bold that started that paragraph is Community Housing Affordability Program. And
right.
Leslin's asking about the second sentence.
Right. When we talk about mixed-use, Leslin, what we're talking about is a project that includes housing along with some other use. Could be a building with retail on the first floor and housing above it, for example. That's the idea. So that you could still apply for the housing part of it under this program, even though you included other uses in the project.
Let me make sure I got that clear. And the only thing you would be allowed to apply for through this program would be the housing portion.
Yeah, you're only going to get grant to subsidize the housing portion, not the commercial portion.
Thank you. Then the next paragraph, Community Housing Trust. Is INHS the only housing trust in our county?
There is really no housing trust per se in the county right now. INHS is working toward that. Mm-hmm. If some other entity wanted to take on that role, they can. Mm-hmm. And we even, I think, actually say that there's, you know, you may come up with an alternative mechanism other than the housing trust to assure permanent affordability. That would be okay, too. It could be okay. So,
well, I would be interested in seeing sort of that language that you're talking about. Right now, the only thing that gets...
I believe it's in the NOFA description.
I didn't see it. The only thing I saw listed here is that folks are highly encouraged to partner with INHS as the preferred agency that serves as a housing trust.
Because that is there was an agreement among the existing housing agencies that might perform that function that it would be better to have one take the lead and specialize in that rather than them all trying to do it, because it does take a certain amount of expertise in developing the ability to implement a program. So it is better off generally in a community there's only one entity that does it, because there's economies of doing it that way.
But right now,
if it changed and some other entity came forward with a proposal that could serve in that function, then that could still occur.
The sentence above the one you just referred to, Leslin, This is now the third big paragraph on page 2 of the NOFA. It does talk about, refers to a community housing trust or another acceptable mechanism. I think that's what Ed is trying to
Thank
point
you.
Out.
Thank you.
Yes.
I missed the acceptable mechanism because the last sentence in that sort of negates, or the second to last sentence sort of negates that at this point. Then I'm going to move on to page, it's a real simple question for me. Page 4, number 5. Who or what is the funding entity that we're talking about? All funding awards must be approved by the funding entity.
Either Cornell, the county, or the city. Those are the three funding entities that's referring to. So when a program oversight committee recommends a grant or a loan to be funded by one of those entities, they have the right to approve it. They don't have to. They aren't bound to fund it just because it's recommended to them. They have the right to approve it, and they need to approve it.
And finally, I want to give a thumbs up to Greg's comments about changing the point systems for the two that were recommended changing.
Carol Chuck.
Yeah, I'll just respond to Leslin first. First of all, my understanding is that Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services hasn't necessarily agreed or entered into any contract to do this, so the details would have to be worked out, as I understand it. And I believe that they were named. They had this hasn't been done. They have done, it's two or three of these, you know, single house trusts, so they have more experience than anybody else in the county, and they had gotten a grant from, I don't know whether it was Park or Triad Foundation, and have brought in sort of the big expert in the country on how to establish these trusts, and have been working on trying to do that. And I think that was the reason they were named, that they had some experience. But it was, I think that in terms of the implementation, it will be up to each person applying to say how they are going to implement this. So that's my understanding, and Ed can correct me if I'm wrong. I did want to respond to Kathy's question, because I actually think that it is an astute observation that usually about the appointments and who would be making these appointments, because our usual process would be to have appointments to such committees and boards that we're appointing people to, done by our committees, and then recommended to the legislature. So I actually would think that it would be, but I don't think it's appropriate for us to recommend to the city or to Cornell how to appoint their partners. So I think the appropriate place to put that would be in our own resolution. And I would suggest, if I see nods, I would suggest a friendly amendment to add in the second, the third resolve.
She's making a motion. She's making
okay. I just need to get in next.
Oh, to respond to.
Well, since you're paraphrasing me, I want to step in next.
Okay. It was going to be to. Because I do believe that this was sort of an oversight that in the third resolved further, I was going to recommend, since this came out of PDEQ, resolved further that PDEQ will recommend to the legislature for appointment three representatives to the Program Oversight Committee, and that would be the appropriate way for us to handle it.
Just a suggested change. Rather than name the standing committee, how about just the appropriate committee of the legislature, because it may fall to a different committee.
Well, Carol, you're making a motion about the change. I don't see heads nodding quite yet about friendly, so reword what you're trying to get on the floor.
I think that if it was worded to the appropriate committee, I think that's
so. State the wording again, if you could.
Okay, then I would move that we amend this, the third resolved further, that the appropriate committee of the Tompkins County Legislature recommend appointment subject to approval by the legislature of three representatives to the Program Oversight Committee, which will then serve, and the rest
is
of it would stand.
Is that friendly to the mover and seconder?
It is. To the mover, yes.
Okay, I have three people lined up to speak. Mike Hattery, Leslin again, and then Kathy again.
I just want to make sure that, you know, I think I went through this when we talked about committee, Ed, and I want to make sure that I got this right. There's this program oversight committee that will oversee the funding of projects. But for those parcels, those housing units that are put in trust, whoever controls the land portion of that trust is not the oversight committee. It's whatever mechanism, be it a housing trust that is affiliated with the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing or some organization, they control the land portion of those parcels, not the Program Oversight Committee.
That's correct.
Right.
Thank you.
We lose control.
Thank you for clarifying. Leslin and Kathy.
I think Mike Hattery just asked my question.
Kathy, and then I see Martha's hand.
It wasn't my intention to encourage the appointment to go through committee. The exact opposite was my intention. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of times these get very political, and it's not, and I want to clarify, it's not my perception that it's our standard policy to run these things through committee. As a matter of fact, that's something we've started doing way too much of late. A lot of these things used to be chair's appointments, and I think it removed them from the political sphere and some of the log jams that committees can have, to have these, like a WIB appointment, something that's a quasi-governmental consensus kind of a group. So for myself, I'd much rather, I think it would be much cleaner to have the appointment go through the chair of the legislature. That person is duly elected by all of us. And for me, I think that that's a much cleaner way to do it, and it's less political, and it becomes less subject to the vagaries of election year and other things. Having said that, I just want to make really clear that my point was that we really haven't fleshed it out. And contrary to what Martha implied and what others have said, I wasn't trying to say that we needed to tell the city or Cornell how to do it. I was trying to point out that we didn't know how we were doing it. And I don't like what was proposed, and the amendment is very close to making me withdraw my support for this, which I'm willing to bend over backwards to do, but it's exactly the opposite of what I intended.
I have Martha next, and then Will.
Although I agree with the idea of comment and changes on the floor, I think maybe we're missing the big picture here. This is a tremendous opportunity for our residents, for the people who live in Tompkins County and the people who want to live in Tompkins County but can't afford it. And I think to nitpick on the wording, the idea of the percentages in the NOFA, Dooley has said that that's a recommendation, and the Program Oversight Committee will be looking at that. I really hope people can support this. We don't want control of housing. We're not in the housing market. We don't want to be owners of housing.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Neither do I want anybody else in control of it.
Well, in control, I mean,
I'd like to bring this to a vote.
The housing agencies own housing subject to, own and operate housing subject to local zoning and rules, et cetera. The homeowners own housing. The units in the housing, in the land trust, will, you know, the majority of the value is the house and not the land, and those will be owned by families. So I just think this is a tremendous opportunity, and I hope everybody can really just join in.
Will, then I'd like to speak.
Thank you, Michael. I just wanted to sort of clarify, make sure I was understanding. Dooley's proposal on the NOFA which I actually support. But my understanding that that is not critical to the resolution. The resolution does not address that at all, and that will be dealt with subsequently. I will hope that majority of this board will support me. I completely agree with Martha that this is long overdue. There's been an incredible amount of work long before I was on the board to make this happen, and to let this, to fail to do this tonight, I think, will be have a very, very negative impact on our community.
Yeah, and I'll be supporting this. This is the three partners in Tompkins County, and there's many more people involved, really are to be commended. This is innovative. This is frontier work. This is meeting a deep, longstanding community need for affordable housing, and I'm voting on the wording of the resolution as it's been revised, and I hope that the majority of this legislative body can do so. I have Dooley, and I think I saw Leslin's hand after that.
I'm still trying to understand Mike Hattery's concern, since I think that wherever this affordable housing is sited will have to be in conformity with the municipality's comprehensive plan, if they have one, with their zoning, if they have zoning. And so that location will be fixed. And if the trust merely holds the land and keeps the appreciation down, I'm not sure why you're worried about the location being held that way. Would you try once more to make me understand what you're concerned about, please?
Well, I have actually Leslin next on the topic, speaking order, and Mike can decide if he wants to respond or not.
Go ahead.
Do you want to respond while it's fresh? You can go right ahead.
No.
Okay. Get a little testy here. Getting a little testy when I begin to feel like, there's patronizing comments around whether, people support or not around affordable housing. And it's just troubling. I think people are asking questions because the things we're talking about, although there's just wording in this resolution, are referenced in this resolution. And if we're voting to support this, then I think it's appropriate for people to nitpick at what's here because these things are referenced and get clarification around them. So I don't like feeling, this sense of being patronized because, I need to support affordable housing. God knows I do. Okay? But I want to support this, but I also want to have my questions answered, and I think that's what's going on for everybody else on this floor.
Are we ready to vote? This is a short form roll call.
I think we ought to have a long. Can you comment? You said you wanted to comment.
No, I said I support this.
You already did.
For purposes that I did. That was it. That's my brief summary. Frank has asked for a roll call vote. Is there further comment before we vote?
Just very briefly. I've supported the idea of suggestions, questions, and changes, but I'm worried if people vote against something for a relatively minor reason. That's all.
Ready to bring it to vote, Kathy Bucevera.
The problem I'm having is that what I've witnessed in the past few weeks is retribution against people for stances that they've taken and trying to deny them spots on advisory boards. And I am very concerned that by putting that amendment in, what we're doing is politicizing this, and it shouldn't be politicized. I'm going to vote for it. I had to speak to it because I want people to notice what's happening, and I'm going to call it when I see it. Yes, yes.
Jim Dennis?
It's outrageous. Please let's vote on it and make our point, make our point somewhere else.
I think we're ready for a roll call vote if I'm understanding the will of the legislature. Roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Oh, enthusiastically, yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Absent. Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Mr. Randall?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
With pleasure, yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Kaplinka-Lehr?
Yes.
13 ayes, 2 noes.
That took a little over an hour. You may be wanting a break. We are at roughly our two-hour point. Seeing the will, we're worth a break. Let's take a quick break, 5 minutes.
Can we just thank the staff for working
yes,
on this?
Yes, I appreciate
again.
The, yes, all the efforts of the staff. And break for 5 minutes, and we'll see you back at 7:45. Thank you very much.